This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, part of the Seneca Network from SEP China. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I am your host, Jared Turner, longtime resident of China, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series, and talk is cheap because supply exceeds demand. My co-host is John Pasden, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, Sinospice.com, and loathes the person who put back pain medication on the bottom shelf. Chinese is filled with an immense amount of similar words, characters, sounds, and grammar points. John and I are going to talk about the right way to approach this so you can maximize your learning. Guest interviews with Stefan Arfert, a Chinese learner from Germany working in artificial intelligence who decided to put his heart into learning Chinese all because of a little girl. All this and more, let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner coming at you from Utah in the United States.
And I'm John Pasden. I am in Shanghai, China. How's everybody doing?
All right, Johnny, we have got a couple reviews we're going to kick into here. Do you want to read yours first?
Yes, I do. And this one is from ARL in the USA. And ARL says, endless motivation. Learning Chinese is such a long-term effort that motivation is essential. The podcast provides interesting research, a sense of curiosity and community, and great interviews with people learning and using Chinese in their professional and family lives. When I start losing focus on my daily self-studies, I know it's time to binge listen to a few more episodes. All right, thanks a lot, ARL. We're really happy that we're providing that motivation, and it is definitely essential.
We appreciate it. All right, our next review comes from Tim from Bonnie, Scotland, but lives in England. That's right. Now, we love this. Tim wrote us like a novel here. It's great. I'm going to have to skim over a little bit for brevity here. But he says, hey, guys, wow, I just reached episode 73 today, starting from zero a few months ago. I've been hooked and can't wait for more. Both John and Jared have put so much work into this podcast and followed the inspiring tips from some amazing non-native Chinese speakers. And he goes on to say the guests are inspiring. Happy to hear that. He married a Chinese girl 15 years ago. He's been studying on and off, but last couple of years, he got into reading with the Chinese Breeze Graded Readers, and then he came and found Mandarin Companion. He says, absolutely hooked by these books, great stories and easy reads, so I bought them all. Anyway, he's made a lot of progress. I also got to give a shout out to his son, Lee. Lee, you're awesome. He's 11 years old, and he's actually starting to read our Mandarin Companion books. He says, take it easy, guys. Keep up the good work. Xie xie. All right, Tim, thanks so much. We appreciate that. And yeah, hey, Tim, reach out to us. Drop us an email.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tim, and great work. Okay, so today we want to cover a topic that is really important for a lot of you, especially at the elementary, intermediate levels, where you're learning more and more, you have this great feeling of progress, but then you start to get into these cases where like a word or a grammar pattern or even characters, they start to seem like really similar, and then you're like, wait a minute, how is that different from that? And then you can sometimes get really bogged down in that. And it is this issue of comparing similar things, we'll say, that that can actually be quite a time suck. It can even cause big problems if you don't do it right. So we're going to give you some advice specifically covering words, characters, and grammar structures. So Jared, you have run into this problem yourself, right? Like, for example, with words?
Absolutely, like all the time. Well, I guess not as much as I used to, right? But, this interested me so much back in the day when I was learning that I went and tried to find out how many unique sounds there were in Chinese. And gosh, the number, I'm always off, I feel like, by like a couple of somebody. So it's just give or take two or three. But if last time I recall, I looked up, it's 413 unique sounds in Chinese. And so when you got that, and to put that in perspective, most native speakers of any language will have a vocabulary of about 9,000 to 10,000 words. So, do the math. I mean, that means there's going to be so many homonyms in Chinese. So that's just one aspect I think we'll be getting at here today, which can make, Chinese difficult.
All right. So what you're talking about there, Jared, is similar sounding words, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So obviously two words, they sound very similar. You frequently get them confused. You want to do something about that. So when I'm talking about similar words, I'm also referring to similar meaning. Like I want to express this. In this situation, I should use this word. Or in that situation, I should use that word. So how do I know which one to use? But actually, the same concept applies to both. So let's look first at the similar sounding words. So I want to keep coming back to this one kind of bad method that some people use that we want to avoid. I strongly recommend everyone avoid this. So for example, you learn this new word and it's a little bit hard to say, but you know, you can handle it. You learn this new word. Then what if your teacher is like, okay, now this word, which is totally new to you, also sounds like this other word, which is also kind of hard. And it sounds like this other word, which is also kind of hard. So originally you had like this one new word, which was enough of a challenge on its own. And then suddenly you're given all these other similar sounding words at the same time, none of which you have a handle on. Okay, so this is a recipe for disaster. You wanna get a handle on one of these words, you know, have a good grasp of it, its pronunciation, its usage, before you move on to the similar ones.
Yeah, I've worked with people who've done this to me, you know, they, you know, learn that word and it's like, oh yeah, well this and that. Well, I wouldn't say recipe for disaster, I would say recipe for confusion. Right.
Or and discouragement.
Really, at the end of the day, when that happens, it's not just confusion, you just forget it all.
Right, because none of it's familiar, and then you're trying to get all of it to sink in, and as a result, none of it really sinks in. Like another flavor of this particular bad method is, you say something, but you say it wrong, and then your teacher's like, oh, what you're saying is, it sounds like this word. Now let's also study that word. Like, no, don't do that. focus on the word that you need, and there's other words that are similar, they will eventually come into the picture later when it's less confusing.
And John, I think there's also a cousin to this. This is when you say something or you learn something, how to say something, and then the individual says, oh, and you can also say it this way and this way and this way. And so they give you like three or four ways to say something that you just learned. And yeah, it all ends up in the same place, forgotten.
Yeah, exactly. That is totally in the same bucket here of this kind of mistake. And actually, if you think about the way kids learn, you'll notice that we don't do this with kids. So, for example, your kid's like, "What is this?" and they're pointing to a table. You know, you're not going to be like, "That's a table." Some other common synonyms include, I don't even know what synonyms there are for a table, but you know, the point is, you give them one word so they can use it right away. And this might not be the case for every single thing that you're teaching to adults, but in this case, at least, you want to do it the same way that you do with kids. You teach, like, you give the one word that they need for their immediate circumstances, and you let them get used to that and get comfortable with it, and then you expand.
Yeah, I think maybe an example like the kids is like, what's this? Oh, that's my closet. But, you know, really, maybe it's a wardrobe. But you could also call it a wardrobe or a chiffarobe, right? No. We stay very simple. Let's stay focused. Make sure they get it down first.
Right. So another case, which is kind of like, you know, it's related to the meaning thing I was talking about in the beginning, would be, you know, like the student asks you, well, how do I say to know in Chinese? And usually a good teacher is going to be like, well, what do you want to say? And the reason they're saying that is because they want the context so that they can give you exactly the word that you need and not the wrong word, right? But if they're not a very experienced teacher, they might be like, well, I'm glad you asked that. To know can actually be expressed in Mandarin in these five different ways. So we're going to study them all right now. Don't do that. You want to get familiar with the one that you need.
This is really important because you listening there at home, you need to recognize and remember that language is a tool. So in that scenario that John gave, you know, they're saying like, you know, how do you say this? Well, what do you want to say? Like, what's the context? Because, you know, they want to hand you a wrench when you need a wrench, or some pliers when you need pliers, and they might both be able to get the job done. But if we know the exact situation, they'll be able to hand you the right tool. So keep thinking about that. Language isn't necessarily just a academic exercise to learn something. We do learn something, but at the end of the day, it's a tool, and you need to make sure you're using it in the right way.
Right. And just to give a few examples, some pretty basic examples to make this clearer for the words and meaning level of this issue. So, for example, in the very beginning, you want to know how to say, I don't know. So this is where your teacher needs to make sure you know the verb 知道, meaning to know a fact, to know something. Right. But this is not the time to introduce other words. Later on, after you're familiar with this verb 知道, to know, then you're talking about meeting new people, and then you want to say, oh, I don't know him. right? Then that's a different verb. So when that situation comes and you already have a handle on 知道, like maybe you tried to use the wrong verb there, that's when the teacher should introduce this new verb, you know, 认识 for knowing people. But this is still not the time to do like a detailed breakdown of where exactly can 知道 and 认识 overlap a little bit, or, you know, how exactly are they different in all possible, you know, scenarios. That should come later. So you get familiar with the one verb, you learn this different scenario where another verb is used, and then once that's more familiar, then you move on to a comparison between the two, because you actually have some experience. You know, you've got something in the database there to compare the different verbs so that the explanation that you're learning of how they're different can actually sink in.
So, John, what are some indicators as a learner that might indicate when you're ready to now dive into deeper meanings or into more nuanced meanings of a word or these two different words or how they're used in different contexts and, you know, how these things can be used in different ways?
All right, so very good question. And let me go back to my example of 知道 and 认识 both being to know. So you start off learning 知道. Later on, you learn 认识 to know a person. And in the beginning, that should be fine. Like, you have these two scenarios. It seems pretty clear cut. Like, there's no need to go into this detailed comparison. But as you improve in other ways, you start developing complexity in what you want to say and what you can understand. Eventually, you'll start to be like, wait a minute, which one do I use here? It seems like this one is a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And naturally, these questions will start coming up in your mind. And sometimes you can answer them yourself by just going into a dictionary and finding a sentence similar to what you want to say. But eventually, you're going to be like, all right, this nagging question won't go away. I need to get clear on the difference between these two verbs. And that's a good time to do it. So when you know the words, but you have these nagging questions and it keeps coming up. Because when you think about it, native speakers don't actually do that. So it's not like parents are sitting around being like, so, dear, do you think it's time to teach little Davy about the difference between these two verbs? Like, they just never do. But especially adult learners, people like me who are kind of analytical, they want to get clear on it. So just don't jump into it too early. Wait until the question, like, it becomes essential to answer.
Yeah, and I think I could add just my own experience on this, because I think in any of my areas in struggling with Chinese, it's in these areas. It's where it's like, hey, wait, I'm using it this way in these situations, but I feel when I'm using it this way in these other situations, people understand me, but it's like, I feel like I'm missing something. You know, it's like, you know, they get it, but, you know, I know there's something wrong there, and I want some of that clarity. And I think just like what you're saying, John, is that at that point, it helps me to go, hey, delve a little bit into this. Look at some grammar stuff or talk to a friend or a teacher or something who can add some clarity on this.
Exactly. Now, we're just talking about words, and another one, which is really the same issue, but it doesn't really feel the same, would be characters. So, you know, you're learning to read. Congratulations. You're learning more and more characters. Eventually, you start to encounter characters that look very similar, or they're the same except for like one component on the left or something like that is different. So then you start to get confused by similar characters. Now, again, the same advice applies here. When you're learning characters, start with the ones that you need and then don't throw in all the similar ones. It's nice to know when the character you're learning is actually a fundamental building block, and you're going to see it a bunch later, but you're not actually trying to learn all those other characters which have this character as a component part. You're just kind of keeping in mind, like, yeah, this one's important.
Sure. And, you know, one thing, John, which I found as a learner, sometimes we come across those characters which are maybe the two different characters, they look so similar to us, and they can be very confusing. But like to native speakers at times, I've shown them like, these two characters, I always get them mixed up. And they're like, what? Those are like, look totally different. They look nothing like each other. And I'm like, what? That's like kind of frustrating, you know. But I will say that as time has gone on, I've gotten more familiar with the characters. Sometimes those things that looked confusing at the beginning, now, once again, I'm now kind of at the point, they look totally different.
Yeah, and then sometimes you'll write a character and it looks kind of wrong because it looks like another character. And so it's good for the teacher or a native speaker to point out, yeah, you're writing that kind of like this one, and so you shouldn't write it that way. But that doesn't mean you have to learn that character and all the words it's in. Like, just keep in mind, don't do that.
Yeah, oh, hit. I guess you're giving an example of when you intend to write a character and you accidentally write another one and it's a real character. Even a blind squirrel finds an acorn once in a while.
It kind of looks like another character, even though maybe the stroke order is wrong. But yeah, you know what I mean. But there's another thing that I've seen, and I've actually seen this advertised for like programs for learning characters online. I'm not going to mention any names, but I've seen this one where it's like, supercharge your Chinese character learning by learning all these similar characters together. And so it'll be very similar characters, and they all just have like a different component on the side or something. And that might seem like it's a good idea, but actually it's really not. And it's for exactly the same reasons we've been saying. If all of them are new, then none of them are going to stick and you're going to get confused. So it's best to stick with the one that you need right away. And that'll be kind of your foundational character that you refer to when you learn the others, and not try to learn similar characters together. Another thing, and I actually looked into this method, I noticed that a lot of the characters they were telling you to learn together were like super infrequent. Like, you will never use these characters. In fact, mm-hmm. you will not encounter them when you're reading until you're at a super advanced level. So why the heck should you clutter up your memory and slow down your learning of the foundational characters by learning them early? Just don't do it.
I will add one caveat on that, John, is that if you are at an advanced level, then, you know, some of those strategies can be helpful or, you know, a little bit more interesting. But, I mean, you got a really solid base, and you probably already know a lot of those characters. Maybe you're just drawing relationships between them as opposed to really learning things that are absolutely new.
Yeah, like when you're advanced, then it can definitely be interesting to compare, like, characters that are mostly similar. One of the interesting things is to look at, like, how many of them have similar pronunciations and how many have totally different pronunciations. Also, sometimes you can be like, oh, that's a character. And then you see that it's like only used in place names from ancient China. And so that's nice to know that it exists, but you don't really need it unless that's your field. So again, for characters, what you want to do is start with the fundamental ones. Like, usually the building blocks that appear in other characters are ones that you learn fairly early. And then you only learn the similar characters when you really need them. And, you know, do the comparisons if you need to when you need both the characters. Just don't jump the gun and try to, like, learn all similar characters early, because that's only going to slow you down. Like, you'll get there eventually. Have patience.
Patience.
All right. And then finally, similar grammar structures. I'm not going to say too much about this because it's just the same concept, guys. But imagine that you ask your Chinese teacher, like, how do I say if? And your teacher's like, well, I have good news for you. In Chinese, there's like 10 ways to say if. So let's learn all the grammar patterns. Like, no, don't do that. There's going to be one that's fairly simple that you should learn first. And it's totally fine if you rely on only one pattern for saying if for like a year, and eventually you'll start noticing that you hear other ones a lot or whatever. But it's totally fine to just pick one and stick with it. Good old trusty only grammar pattern that I ever use when I want to say if. Like, that's fine.
It's like playing rock, scissors, paper and always coming up with a trusty rock, right? Never fails.
Rock but, never fails. But stick to rock.
I think it's a Simpsons episode, Bart Simpson. Rock never fails.
I know the reference.
Okay, good. Also, I on a point behind this too is that, you know, learning the most basic or the most commonly used grammar structure on how to say certain things will also immensely benefit you as a learner, in the sense of helping other people understand you, because, you know, at the beginning stages, our pronunciation, our tones, sometimes, you know, they're not quite there. You know, we're still growing, we're still improving our skills. But when you say things in the patterns that are most familiar, it's much easier for a native speaker to anticipate what you're going to be saying or trying to say, even if you may not be saying it properly the entire way. So that's just a point.
Yeah, and one other thing I'd like to point out, if you use the Chinese Grammar Wiki, then you'll notice that you first learn certain patterns, and then when you compare them, that's going to be on a higher difficulty level, because it's good to get the patterns down. Like, maybe you learn one at A2, one at B1, you know, intermediate, and then you don't really do a deep comparison into B2. And That's good because you want to really get them under your belt before you get into all the details of how they really differ.
So, John, I think overall the takeaway from this is really like focus on the things that are most functional for you. I mean, we're kind of like we keep banging the drum or we're a broken record on this, right? We're just saying, you know, focus on the things that are going to be simple for you at the beginning. Don't focus on learning a whole bunch of things that aren't going to be as useful to you at this stage.
Yeah, and comparing and contrasting similar things is useful and a good study method, but delay it as long as you can and just go with the basics as long as you can.
That's right, because when you've mastered the basics, then you're ready for the next step.
And you can do it. You can learn Chinese.
All right, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And today our sponsor is
Manor Companion. Today we are talking about Jekyll and Hyde.
Jekyll and Hyde is our level 2 graded reader using 450 basic characters. It's also our newest graded reader that we released earlier this year.
Yeah, so it's a really fun story. You might think you know the story. Every version of Jekyll and Hyde is a little bit different because Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde actually being the same person is not really a spoiler at this point. But, you know, ours, as always, is adapted to a Chinese story. So it's quite enjoyable, I think.
Yeah, so we did get a piece of hate mail, so to speak. Someone who was upset that we changed the ending of the story. I'm like, well, if we didn't, there would have been no surprise. So anyway, you can go out and get it today. You can find it on Amazon, iBooks, Kobo, or wherever you get your books. You can get it in print or ebook formats. And you can also get it in traditional characters. So Jekyll and Hyde, level 2. 450 basic characters and Manor Companion graded reader.
Let us know what you think.
All right, now it's time for rants and raves. John, what do you have for us today? Do you have a rant or do you have a rave?
I have a rave, and it's kind of a weird rave, but I was just meeting with a client like last night, actually, and we were talking about characters, and she was just getting into characters. And it's kind of confusing when you first start getting into characters and you're trying to get your head around like how they work, like within the system of Chinese writing. Like, you know, you learn Ren means person, and it's a character, but it's also a component in other characters. And then, like, you learn other characters, which are not words. They're only components. And like, it just seems so confusing in the beginning. If you guys can remember when you were first getting started, it is confusing. But if you stick with it, because Chinese is a system that only builds on itself, it just turns into like this really cool thing. Like if you think about English, it uses a lot of Greek and Latin roots. And so if you're educated in those, you can understand a lot of scientific words more easily. But Chinese doesn't borrow from other languages. It borrows from classical Chinese, like the most. So like, everything is Chinese, but just like in different ways. And I don't know, I just think it's a really like complex, but sort of a beautiful, chaotic system if you just take the time to appreciate it. But sadly, you need to be at a somewhat advanced level to really appreciate it. But still, it is cool and it is waiting for you when you get there.
I think I'll start today, John.
You have started, Jared. Just keep going. Okay, so you got a rant or a rave?
All right, John, today I have a rave. That's right. And this is something that has gone around recently. Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, Tesla, that guy. Anyway, he recently tweeted out a poem that was in Chinese. And he says, just humankind is the one translation of the title. And people are making all sorts of comments on it. But I think it was pretty cool. This is one of those poems that, you know, elementary school children, they all learn. It's a very famous poem. Most Chinese people are going to know this poem. And I can just give you I'm not going to read it to you. But in general, this poem, it's the history behind it is that there was an older brother that was emperor at the time. He was jealous of his younger brother, who was very intelligent, had a lot of talent. And the emperor forced his younger brother to create a poem. And if he couldn't do it, he was going to be put to death. And so the younger brother, he knew about the older brother's intentions, and he made this poem to appeal to his older brother's sense of guilt. And it refers to like being born of the same root and being and reawakened his older brother's humanity and led to him to set the young and it led the older brother to set the younger brother free. So it's actually a pretty deep poem. There's some symbolism behind there about, you know, it's like burning the stalk to kind of like cook the beans type of a thing. But they all come from the same root. So I think it was interesting. It was kind of fun that he threw it out there. He's taking a dig at some cryptocurrency stuff that was going on recently. But it was kind of fun to get this poem out there and have a lot of people talking about it. There's already like articles written about this stuff. So yeah, you can go check it out. We'll put the link in the show notes.
Yeah, when it comes down to it, we're all just human beings, right? Why can't we just get along?
Oh, John.
Hi, I'm Stefan, and I'm actually from Germany, a small little village. And now I'm actually in Shanghai. I love studying Chinese, but I also love playing with my daughter nowadays.
Stefan started his career working in artificial intelligence, but currently is applying his training to his young daughter.
When I tell people what I'm actually doing professionally, it always sounds very, very, very crazy. Not really crazy, but fun because it's like artificial intelligence. And it's also fun to see there the connections between how machines learn and how we people actually learn languages.
As you listen to Stefan's story, note how his motivations to learn Chinese have changed over time. Whatever they may be, finding our reason to learn is what gives us the drive to move through the challenges of learning Chinese. And Stefan has absolutely done that. Stay with us. Why did you start learning Chinese?
My wife originally is from China, even so she came to Germany when she was 4 years old. And so she grew up bilingual, so it was no need to study Mandarin to communicate with her. But it was a natural interest that once we became a couple to better understand her culture, being able to communicate with her family, and whenever we would do a trip to China, like being able to talk a little bit.
So it was a girl. How did you guys meet?
We just got to know each other at the university. So she actually has a German passport. So I didn't have any connection to China beforehand. So she was my connection to China.
But German, I guess, was a native language for her if she moved to Germany when she was four, right? So how much was Chinese part of her life? Because, you know, we have this dynamic in all over the world, right? Chinese people will move to another country. They adopt that language and then, you know, the kids will end up speaking Chinese, but their Chinese level kind of varies. So, I mean, what was her experience like?
Like when she came to Germany, her parents initially wanted to speak German with her, such that she picks up the language faster. But they realized in kindergarten, she picks up German very fast and will very quickly forget all of her Chinese. So they switched completely. And until today, they are speaking Chinese at home. And she also went to this afternoon classes, weekend classes, which for her worked quite well because it seemed to be a lot of fun meeting other girls, having a similar background. So she's mother tongue, but maybe like wouldn't use words a native speaker really would use.
You know, I know a lot of guys and girls who have maybe married a native Chinese speaker, but they never learned Chinese. So what was it that made you decide, say, hey?
So actually, when we got together, after a few weeks, I actually moved to Peru. So being in Peru without speaking a lot of Spanish and studying it there, I realized how important it is to understand a language, to connect with the people there. And the same actually I realized when I visited China a few months afterwards. So I really started studying a little bit in the evenings, starting with Rosetta Stones, like just playing around a little bit, chatting with her in the car to get a little bit crisp of the language. And also what then kept me a little bit was doing an initial language class in Shanghai after I finished my university degree.
Sounds like you got some really basic stuff at this point, you know, in Chinese, but what kind of was moving you to go forward and continue to learn?
One could describe it as fear, because 3.5 years ago, when I knew that I'm going to become a dad, we decided that our little girl is going to grow up bilingual. So my wife is going to talk with her Chinese. And I kind of feared that my wife and her at some point in time will start talking Chinese with each other. Then I won't understand what they're going to talk about.
So you decided you wanted to move to China? So tell me about this.
Yeah, so like the first time I actually came to Shanghai, it was probably 2010. It was like coming into the future.
Mind-blowing experience. First time like in Shanghai or Beijing is like, whoa, this place is amazing.
Just seeing it around the buildings, the skyscrapers, the old alleys, like having the opportunity to have a lunch for Five Kwai. All this together at one place was just amazing. So we have been always dreaming about it. Shanghai would be great, but maybe let's start working a little bit in Germany. Let's first gain some experience. And there have always been a little bit the fun story I always told friends. Maybe at some point in time, I'll take parental leave and we'll move to Shanghai. And I will just study the language there and take care of our daughter. And actually, people have been making fun about me talking about this for quite a long time. But then in end of 2019, we made the decision. My wife quits the job, that she would start for a job. And then I would come with her and I would search for something here as well. But then something happened in the world, which made things a little...
What was that? What happened?
That was a virus, which actually led to the effect that everyone now knows the birth city of my wife, because she actually is from Wuhan.
Yeah. Oh, is she? I didn't know
she
that.
She is from
That's
Wuhan,
great.
Yeah. And actually, her grandparents have been there during that time. Her father has been there in January, February 2020. So we actually had quite initial contact with the pandemic early on.
Wow. I bet that was interesting. I mean, I was in China in January of 2020 and I left 1 week before. But I mean, actually having someone on the ground there in Wuhan, I bet that was a bit of a different experience getting kind of the stories that were coming out of there.
It was. And it's when talking in Germany about, it's just a flu, but you have someone telling you there how it actually was. It was something different.
Yeah, I get that.
However, coming back to finding a job, then she actually made it finding a job in summer last year and starting her job in September. Like my boss already knew that we planned this, so I canceled my contract. Wanted to leave by September last year, which, didn't happen, but we thought in some months it will happen. And so I really then focused a lot of time in studying Mandarin and taking care of our daughter. We had some positive signs of being able to move. So after Chinese New Year, everything will relax. And finally, with the help of the Chamber of Commerce, we made it to a charter flight. We're able to get visa actually during summer and now have arrived in Shanghai just some weeks back in October 2021.
Yeah, you know, this is interesting. Not a lot of people are really, I think, aware of this, but I've got a lot of Chinese friends and non-Chinese friends who have been going back and forth a little bit, but there's a big quarantine process right now to get into China. Say ma fan si la, right? It's a pain. But just tell us a little bit, what was that like, going through this quarantine process to get into China right now?
It was for us a little bit easier than it is for normal people because we actually had the luck to join a charter flight from the German Chamber of Commerce. So we actually flew into Qingdao and there we stayed for 2 weeks in a hotel quarantine. So it was like we also got a family room. So with actually two rooms, so my wife could work 1 week. The other week, luckily, was Golden Week. So she had also off while I could play with my daughter. We had a nice view of the sea, but it doesn't help too much.
You are locked in the room essentially for 2 weeks, right?
But I always say, when there have been lockdowns, whether it be strict ones or less strict ones, when there have been rainy weather throughout the last 1.5 years, life wasn't that much different in Europe from time to time as well. And we knew it. We were prepared for it. There has been one suitcase, just toys for our daughter. There was a rabbit, an Easter rabbit coming every morning, bringing her a little book. So we had ideas how to make it more enjoyable. And food was also not bad. So,
that's right. It's perpetual room service in quarantine, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, that's great. Well, Stefan, what were you doing to take your Chinese from kind of this basic level, and it sounds like you were texting and pinging, to getting to a point, all right, where I'm able to now maybe have a bit more of a conversation?
It started this 3.5 years ago when I looked into how I could integrate it into my daily life. And I tested out many different things throughout the last year. So one thing, I commuted maybe half an hour, and out of this was like 20 minutes in the subway. So every morning, every evening, I was doing a little bit on Duolingo, which also made me a little bit familiar with the characters initially. Also having then an additional classes in the Confucius Institute, like having different sources and really making it continuously made the progress there. But last year, when I dedicated more time to it, during that time, yeah, I already started a little bit like a curriculum from YoYo Chinese, which I really much like. So having a standard curriculum, which I would say helped me a lot, but there was then missing comprehensible input and also speaking practice, because I spoke from time to time as my wife, but it's probably no good ideas to have your spouse being your teacher. Like maybe it works sometimes, but not in the normal situation. Even so, she helped me a lot in many situations, but not as a standard.
I'm curious, like, if you're trying to, like, say, oh, I'm going to really practice Chinese with my wife, you know, obviously she speaks German and I'm assuming English, but what was that like? What kind of happens where it kind of breaks down and maybe you go to the common language you share?
So it always worked when we discussed upfront, no, okay, let's practice now a little bit of Chinese and let's say, let's do it for 20 minutes and 30 minutes. And then we kind of actually stick to it. And maybe we threw in German words, but if out of nowhere in our daily life, we would switch the language, that's totally awkward. And it was even very hard for me to switch the standard language with my parents-in-law, whose German is quite good.
Her parents, who are Chinese, right?
Yeah, right. So even there, switching from the German language to the Chinese one was not an easy one, because if a relationship is established in one language, it's hard to switch it back. But really when it took off was a little bit having the mixture of this lecture from YoYo Chinese, which I could fit into my schedule, really making it a habit to also repeat the vocabulary I studied there. So doing flashcards and every morning, combining it with having like a tutor with whom I talked about different topics. I found her on iTalki. And she was something like a language parent for me. So someone whom I felt really comfortable speaking with. She was not really correcting me a lot. She was using the right vocabulary. So that really made me confident in speaking. And then also, like, that was one part of comprehensible input. And then making it a habit of also reading and reading in the evenings before going to bed, or like just in bed reading for 20 minutes, to really making a habit out of it.
So I've heard you say comprehensible input. That's music to my ears. But compared to what you were doing before, was perhaps the study routine or how you were learning Chinese before, was that not necessarily comprehensible input? Or was it stuff that was maybe a little bit too hard for you? Or was it just a bit scattered? I'm kind of curious to know about that.
Before that, it was probably also comprehensible, but not mass input. It was just a little bit here and there. And it was just playing around, then having it like a more natural environment, like having a conversation. And I had conversations then with my teacher in the end for 45, 60 minutes, mainly in Chinese with some English words in between. It's something different than repeating what a teacher has said to you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I noticed something that you had said also previously, is that like, there wasn't maybe a time where it really maybe exploded and took off, but you noticed an improvement simply when you started putting in more time.
To some degree, Chinese is harder to learn, but it's learnable. Like, you can learn Chinese. That's how your podcast is named. And it's also, if you want to study something else, you want to study a computer language, if you invest like 15 minutes a week, you won't learn it. You won't master it. So the same actually holds true with Chinese. So it was for me about how to integrate it into my day, that it's not a burden studying it, but that it also helps me.
And so what is your experience like now being in the country, China, and you're surrounded by native speakers? Was it what you expected, or has it been harder or a little easier than you thought?
So it's actually my seventh or eighth times being in China. So it's interesting to see the comparison, how it's now compared to before. Beforehand, I was really illiterate. So I could speak a little bit. I maybe knew a couple of characters, but now knowing, I don't know, several hundreds, maybe 1,000, it's not that I could read everything around, but it's like, feels like, hey, cool. In that advertisement, they talk about that. That's, I understand a little bit more what's going on. Now being able to talk with my parents-in-law in Chinese, texting in WeChat, but talking with them about daily stuff, it's great. and also doing the little things in daily life, like picking up my daughter from the kindergarten. Like one of the teachers speaks Chinese with me. Yeah, I have to repeat it, ask her again what happened today. But that's a very important topic to me. Another very important topic to me is buying grinded coffee beans, because my grinder actually broke during the move and I was running out of it, and starting a day without a good cappuccino is something I don't want to do. So I went to the small shop and explained to them that I want to buy grinded coffee beans, and they couldn't speak English at all and they normally don't sell it.
So you did it. So you got ground coffee beans.
I got grounded coffee beans, yeah.
That's a win. One thing I totally loved in my experience in China was when I started learning enough characters that I was able to read some of the signs on the streets, like the shop signs. I always characterize it like the streets started to come to life.
Yes.
What is your current exposure to Chinese-speaking people, even though you're in China?
So we just moved in actually 1 week ago. So there's no routine there yet. So I'm currently in the phase of looking for interesting opportunities. This is where I actually mainly in the job environment currently, when it comes to interviews and stuff like that, speak English. So my exposure to Chinese is with my parents-in-law, with the kindergarten teacher, when doing some shopping. So it's not coming naturally. Therefore, like, you probably got to know a lot of expats living in Shanghai who like didn't speak more than the taxi Chinese.
Very little.
So it's not coming naturally. So it's about really then also looking for the small little opportunities, like the moving company. Just having a small chat with them while having our lunch with them was fun understanding what they're talking about. Yeah.
So Stefan, like, has Chinese helped you like connect with your family or in-laws at any level? Maybe you could talk about that.
Yes, actually, there's one thing. When I had this teacher from iTalki, I used to write like little essays or like a page or something like that to different topics. And it was been sometimes a little bit about my childhood and stuff like that. And once it was actually writing about how I want to raise my daughter. So raising children has different cultural backgrounds in China and Germany or Europe. Even so, like my parents-in-law and I, we want the same and the best for my daughter. We have different views from time to time. And it's hard to overcome these different views, like if you aren't really fluent in a language and cannot understand everything. So neither German nor Chinese would have sufficed to speak about it. But having written this essay, or like this short text in Chinese, they could read it. They just could understand it better. And afterwards, we actually could talk a little bit about it. And that just make connections easier and bridges the cultures as well. That was really cool.
That's really, so it was basically like how you want to raise your child, right?
Yeah, like what is important for me for raising my child? Which values are important? It's not about like the details, but like what is the idea behind? Yeah.
I don't think I ever had that discussion with my in-laws, so that sounds pretty neat.
Go for it. Do it. Helps.
What do you think has been the biggest challenge for you in now being in China and using your Chinese?
Biggest challenge? It's probably the understanding part. Like you can prepare what you say, you can somehow say it, repeat it in different ways, but the answer is still unexpectable. That's sometimes a challenge, and also the dialects. Not all of the people speak proper Putonghua. So I also had to get used to understanding my parents-in-law who say "sisi." 444. Like these things. But I realize now after speaking some time with them, it's like I'm just like getting used to it. And it just takes some time and a lot of input to really understand these little differences. But on the understanding side, there's also one highlight currently. I now realize if people are speaking Shanghainese versus Mandarin. So being able to make this difference is also fun.
Yeah, I got to say, I still struggle with that. Sometimes I have to like listen for a little bit. Then I'm like, I don't understand what they're saying. And it's like, Shanghainese, must be Shanghainese.
But there are also like small wins these days. So I recently actually met with my former teacher, like he's actually now working for John. That's a small coincidence. And like having a dinner with him for 3 hours using English here and there a little bit, but mainly talking in Chinese is just,
like,
it's just cool. And I know it's a teacher and he uses a little bit more appropriate language for me, but it's still kind of a cool experience. And it feels you're more connected to the people. And something which is nowadays maybe even more important than ever before.
That's really cool. What do you think is your next steps? Where do you hope to arrive with your Chinese one day?
I hope to arrive to master normal life to 99%, like having the normal conversations with my parents-in-law, understanding everything there. When I start working here, first being able to have lunch sessions with my co-workers in Chinese, like picking up there a lot and being able to make personal connections. And also then just getting to know random people and being able to speak with them Chinese will make a difference. Maybe in a year or so from now, also being able to use Mandarin like in a work environment, because it will help. And I know that a lot of Chinese people, even also that English might be quite good, they are very hesitant in using it and it makes things more complicated. So it will also just build bridges a little bit. And that's where I hope I will get.
What advice would you give to someone who's starting to learn Chinese right now?
I would recommend them just test out what you like. Test out different methods, test out different teachers. Take ownership for yourself. Because if you don't have fun most of the time, yeah, it sometimes is hard to study Chinese, yes. But if you don't have fun and cannot integrate it into your daily or weekly life, then It's hard to keep up and really improve over time. And if you don't improve, there will be moments of, oh yeah, I don't want to continue. Everyone has this. But if it's at least fun, there's one more reason to stick with it.
You know, and I what I really like, Sivan, was really important in your story is, you know, having, you know, say, hey, I want to be able to, you know, speak with my daughter and she's going to be bilingual. That's powerful. I appreciate you sharing that story because, you know, we all need to have our motivation, our reason to learn.
We absolutely have to have that one, yeah. But actually, I'm forbidden to speak with my daughter in Chinese, kind of, because my wife says I will teach it to her wrong. I'm just allowed to sing with Chinese songs. That's working, yeah.
Gotcha. That's right. You got to teach her German and English, right? Sivan, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here on our podcast and sharing your experience with all of us. It's been insightful.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me and keep on the good work. And I'm waiting for level 3.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, ballerina, actress, performer, pilot, curator, surfer, architect, writer, and that one guy named Nathaniel. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us on Facebook and at mannercompanion.com. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is Kaiser Guo at SUP China, and our interview editor is James Harper with Filter Production. I'd like to thank our guests, Stefan Arferth, and of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Pastor. See you next time.